The light is a first step into the Nazarene church. That's a good start. We have, as a group, we have given our best worker, Heiko Schmidt, to you. So he is here. Him and me work together for many years in the Academy of Christian Leadership. And you see there is a way to connect. Well, now I see I did something wrong again. I have given you the German presentation. You will get the English translated presentation later on. I just need this cow for you. Yeah. The issue we discussed today was very simple. At the end, we asked the question, how do we evangelize the world? Or in Swiss terms, how do you get the cow fed and produce proper milk? It took a bit of time to get the world map on the cow. So that's the issue. Yeah, how do we evangelize the world? That's the question. And what I try to do is to present to you a different approach. To some extent, a paradigm change. But it's not a new approach. In our Marburg Institute for Society Transformation, where we publish most of our literature, we prepare a volume on the history of transformative society-relevant church work through 2,000 years of history of the Christian church. And you'll be fascinated how central the idea is in different phases of the Christian history. So it's not a new, it's a biblical approach. I would rather say the modernist approach is what we do today, not what I call for. But for us, for some of us, it's still a very different approach. And is always with paradigms and with perspectives, you know, we have to think twice and we have to take time. And such a presentation in a number of hours is not going to change things yet. So we need time. I have this nice picture. I like the painting of Henri Diron. Yeah. See, that's why we send him to become a Nazarene.
You are great. He has saved my day many, many times, so now he's saving it again. Henri Diron is a French expressionist, and his paintings are great. Usually, all the paintings are painting stories of fishermen in Bretagne. They are great paintings. Yeah? He especially likes to paint ports, old ports and castles. And one of his most famous paintings is this one. Yeah? It's a great painting. It's a sun-filled painting. You just feel the atmosphere of a sunny day in Bretagne. There are not many days like that. So you have to catch one. But it brings color into your life. Now, this picture, this painting, he did painting this particular port. And you may ask yourselves, how much vodka has that painter drank before he painted this picture, painting of a situation which is gray and totally different? Now, that's not only my question. Not only my question. The fathers of the city in Bretagne, inviting all the tourists to come and see the original places where Henri Diron drew his pictures, they have probably discovered the same problem. And so they took copies of his paintings and hang it at the place where he was standing when he painted that picture. And it's still quite complicated, you know, to see that thing and then have that product in front of you. So the fathers of the city in Britannia, they not only put that thing there, but also a, sorry for that, there is one missing, they put that perspective finder. So you have to look through this in order to see what the guy saw. And of course you have to have more than that. Sorry for this. You have to have more than that. You have to have the right sun. You have to have the right conditions, and then you may see that this place is actually sun-filled and Diderot-driven. Why do I show you this? Because I believe perspectives change. They need a guidance. You need to be guided in order to see things. Yeah? For instance, if you want to see a missional church, an holistic church, you want to see a jubilee year driven gospel in the Bible, you have to discover Luke chapter 4, verse 18, and read this passage to the end. Because Jesus came to preach the year of the Lord. And so if you interpret Jesus and read the Bible properly, you may not interpret the Bible according to your stomach or historic critical idea of Greek philosophers. You will only be right if you interpret the work of Jesus and the work of his disciples taking seriously his own idea of mission. And then you go back to the Old Testament, and then you find the holistic view of the Zion theology, and all of a sudden your perspectives are enlarged, and you start to understand that the church is a powerful agent of God in the world. Now knowing that perspective change like this, it needs more than just 5 minutes of talking. I would like to conclude the sessions, my sessions, with a time of questions and answers. I try to answer your questions. When there will be no questions, I still have a presentation here. So it will not be painful. I will not close down. But I'd like to give you the opportunity to ask your questions. Now, remember, there is never stupid questions. There are only stupid answers. And the only body in a position to say something dumb is me. Yeah? So be free, feel free to ask your questions. And then feel free to ask your questions in your English. You don't have to speak a better English than I do. My English is also bad. Okay. Is there a question? As somebody listened to me and now you are incredibly angry or excited or completely mixed up, please ask your question. Yeah?
Okay, and the question has to do with the idea of mapping. And I'm trying to understand, if you could give us a further explanation about what you mean by mapping and maybe how that differs from what other people mean by mapping, such as Peter Wagner or anybody that's familiar with that kind of literature, so that you could sort of clarify for us what the differences are and so on and so forth.
Well, I didn't use the word mapping consciously. I used the word context analysis and not mapping, because spiritual mapping of Peter Wagner and George Otis always stands in the way. And that is, to a great extent, a mapping towards a mapping of demonic and spiritual powers
exactly.
In the city. So if you say, how do you map or create a religious map of your territory, then some of the thoughts Peter Wagner and especially George Otis, Peter Wagner always copies somebody, he's a very unoriginal thinker, but George Otis is one of the drivers of this idea, So if you take George Otis' ideas, so most of it, or much of it, I would subscribe to. But what I do not like about spiritual mapping is the fact that they believe that prophetic visions, prophetic impressions, and prophetic understanding is at the end all you need.
And that is obviously not true, because prophets need to be checked on. And so what we do, we combine a social analysis, and social sciences have developed a number of tools to do so. Mm-hmm. So we use scientifically proved social analytical tools on the one hand, but we also use a prophetic impression. And then, if God reveals to us a certain reality, it will always be logic, because God himself is logos. Yeah, there is no spiritual knowledge which at the end is not logic. So we bring this social analysis and a spiritual analysis into one, and then use both sources for such a mapping.
Okay, and then the second question kind of related to that has to do with what you talked about, the demonic, and how that is often an obstacle. Okay. And how much of that is just pure spiritual beings, and how much of that is, say, structures of other things that we need to face?
It's a very good question. I personally believe that sin is personal and sin is structural. Demonic powers, they will mislead us morally and ethically, and then very often we define our personal sin in terms of ethics and morals. So, and that's to one extent right, but that's not all. Yeah, sin is a much broader term in the Bible. But then, on the other hand, there are structures which have been created by demoralized people, and demoralized people, being sinful, create sinful structures. So at the end, structures like that have a demonic quality. I wouldn't say that demonic structures, being just structures, not personalities, not real personal powers. You know, that's what happens today in the so-called emergent movement. They would eliminate the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not do so. I'd say, well, the devil is still a personality, and demons are real personalities. So I fight demonic powers, not just structurally, but there is both. There is the personal and the structural.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
In the last days, I learned something about the context of our world and the social approach, something like sinus milieus. Okay. And you also have written something to know the environment. But this morning you spoke also about the importance of the local situation. How does it come together? Do you have more look to the parish, or have you also looked to the different cultural differences?
Well, we always look to the society, and society is not your parish. Parish is a part of the society, and very often parish is very exclusive and doesn't really belong to that society culturally. And then it's a huge problem, because the two do not meet and evangelism would never take place. So we look to society, we look to your block. In our German language, we have a new Swiss word which has now been established quite clearly in our German language, called Quartier. So there's also an English word, quarter. So we talk about the Quartier, about the quarter, about the block where you live. And that block describes your territory. And it's 1.5 kilometers in radius, you know, walking distance. Walking distance is very important for that type of a block. if you want it. Now, where do you get the information from? Sinus, you mentioned sinus. Sinus is, for those who are not Germans, a Heidelberg-based institute which tries to describe different milieus in Germany. In general terms, there are some sinus studies done in bigger cities, but not in every city. In many, many cities, like your city here, for instance, I suppose there is a social analysis done about the city. Not in all cities, but in most of them. So this is one of the sources we use. But we will always go ourselves. The church moves into society. The church does expert interviews. The church goes to the mayor. The church goes to the school teacher. The church goes to the social players and the institutions of society which are of importance. We ask ourselves questions. Because when we come with a theological perspective. Sinus doesn't do this. Social analysis is not enough. Social analysis conducted by theologically minded people like us is enough. But it's a different story altogether. But now moving into the science of context analysis, I would probably have to teach the next 5 hours. I don't have time for that. The book is written for churches. It's actually written for church people with a number of examples how we have done it with our students in many places. For instance, in Offenbach, not that far away here from Frankfurt, we did a Offenbach analysis, and it's given as an example. The same book on potential analysis is now coming to the press and will be available in the beginning of next year. We will have a book on the involvement. The German word for it is Verortung. I like that word very much, but it is not translatable into English. So getting involved in the territory, becoming territorially minded. Yeah, so the literature is on the way, and I'm very sad to say it's not available, not even in English. Yeah, and I move throughout the world. I know the missiological world very well. I'm a member of an international society for mission studies, and literature is not available because this paradigm is a new paradigm for the modern days world. And we accentuate different things. So literature is not available. For those of you who do not come from a German-speaking tradition, I come from the former Soviet Union, so I always push Russian, simply because that's where my heart is. So all the literature is sooner or later available in Russian, and I do everything to get see this published. The second idea is to publish it in European languages except English. and that has something to do with my problem with the English publishers in England and in the US. But if somebody says we are interested to see the literature come in our language and you have connection to publishers, be free to contact us in Marburg. We will help you to see that book published. It's now, the books are coming in Hungarian. In Hungary, we have a conference called Balatonnet, about 1,500 to 2,000 people meet there annually. And the conference has decided for the next 5 years to take transformation as a main topic for Hungary. So the literature is going to be available in Hungarian. It's available almost in total now in Portuguese because the Brazilian Evangelical Alliance decided to move this way. So there is a movement worldwide, and we are glad to be a part of it.
I'm taking a philosophy course right now, and my teacher said there is a difference between reading about philosophy and doing philosophy yourself, between reading about what other people thinking about and thinking of yourself.
Yeah.
I was wondering, everything that you say makes so much sense and is so simple, and I feel a bit frustrated, and I wonder, why did I not come up with that? and I guess what I'm wondering is, how can we start to think for ourselves so that we don't need to wait till the next leadership conference to get new insights.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say things I come up with is absolutely nothing new. Yeah. If you go to the Southern Hemisphere, you go to Africa. So I have been professor in South Africa now for many, many years. I became professor in 1997 at the University of South Africa. It's a huge university, and we are serving all Africa with 400,000 students in mission alone, 15,000 students in missiology. So it's the largest missiological faculty worldwide. And in Africa, in holistically minded cultures where religion belongs to the heart of society, this is no question. It's absolutely nothing new to them. Yeah, the same thing is true in Central America, in many countries of Asia. Like, go to India. You go to India. In India, we have seen an incredible growth of the church. In Bihar, for instance, province Bihar, where we have seen thousands and thousands and thousands of Christians dying for their faith. In May of last year, I spent time in Bihar, in India, and went into conversation with some mission leaders. And they told me, well, we have lost 14 churches and about 50 of our leaders last year. But God was good to us, and in the middle of persecution, we have added 50,000 new members. And they say it like this, you know, just like this. 50,000 new members. 50,000 new members? Well, even the Dutch starts to get hiccups. It is something. You see, it is incredible. But then you ask themselves, them, how do you do so? And they tell you about their holistic approaches. And then I stay there, and I am so small. I am nobody. So what we do, we went to the Bible, and we become holistic, and them have always been holistic to a certain degree. And who, where did they get it from? From our missionaries. The early pietistic movement, the early Protestant movement, was all holistic. It came out of revival, like take Methodism, for instance. And what did the Methodists do in England? One of the first acts. Abolish what? Slavery. They were very political. Our problem is the newer pietism. Pietism, which has taken over our minds, evangelicalism, which was brought into the Lausanne movement 1974 with a clear distance to the ecumenics. And we call the ecumenical movement social. It was social gospel, and we were evangelistically minded. So the whole story is not that old, but it sits in our bones. So you say, how can we change? Well, read the Bible and do it. Yeah? I'm a professor of mission, and I could only teach, but I will never only teach. I told my seminary, my school, if you do not allow me to plant new churches and do what I believe, then I will stop teaching the very same day. Because I want to see Word become flesh. My whole theology is incarnatory. And going and doing it, all of a sudden I discover more. And then my brain is stretched. And then I discover biblical verses. Things I told you yesterday, I knew all of them. Matthew 16, verse 18, I memorized in Greek, in Latin, in German, in English, in Russian, and still read it wrong. Because memorization alone is not helping. But as soon as you move into society and you start to do it, all of a sudden you discover things you have never seen before. And that's what you said today, you know. The Bible becomes a scan. And it scans you. And it's going to question your philosophy and change your philosophical attitudes. Okay, more questions.
Okay, earlier you were talking about moving into that village, was it 600 years old, that didn't have any churches? And you had the group that did the community assessment, the context analysis. I assume that having locals in that group was a part of it. How did you go about getting those locals on board with what you were doing, the vision that you had for the village?
Well, first of all, we had no locals because we all came from the outside. But what we did, we had to become local, meaning I did not eat any restaurants outside of this place anymore. There was only one restaurant, and the food wasn't the best. But I decided to go there. So we became local. So we would do... we would support local business, local people. We would involve in local politics. We became local. So our roots were now in that village. And it takes a bit of time until your first connections come. Yeah? That village, for instance, was a village with an incredible fight. 7 years down the road, they had no village festivity anymore. In German, there's a village kind of festival called Kirmes. Now, a village without a Kirmes is not a village anymore. So, but that village had no Kirmes since about 7-8 years, because 2-3 families, they had a fight with one another, and so they couldn't do it anymore, any longer. So Kirmes is not a Christian thing, not at all. But we as a church, as a small church, we suggested we'll bring Kirmes back to this village. Because a village without a festival, a village without a celebration, a village without getting together and talking to one another is at the end no real, meaningful space of life. Even if there would be beer and German Würstchen, sausages and what have you, and we are called to preach the gospel. But as soon as this first festivity on our premises, the church premises, the first festivity was brought into running, all of a sudden people said, well, you belong to us. We were giving them back a tradition which was about 600 years old. And now for the last 7 years they couldn't do it. Yeah, and I openly said, the devil has stolen it from you. And why has the devil stolen it from you? Well, you all know. They all knew. Then the three families were all Druids. They were the problem troublemakers. And for us to exchange, to become a centerpiece in designing societal ways, was not evangelism, but for instance this. Or the other action. The village was quite dirty. The village is in a very difficult situation because the area where we live, it was an industrial area of Germany, in the mountain area, and German industry actually started in the Bergisch Land, in that part of Germany. But now there is no copper, there is no minerals, there's nothing in that mountains anymore left. So we are structurally down. Huge unemployment, problems, many, many problems. So we went into that village and we said, well, we will try to find ways to bring employment back. Yeah? Even in small scales, very small scales. But this church is serving people where people are. And we were very small. When I came to our mayor and told him we are going to change the village, and he asked me, how many members do you have? And I said, 5. If my business card would not read Professor Dr. Johannes Reimer, and for a German Professor Doctor is like the Pope himself, so he would not criticize me openly because you don't do this, you're a polite German. But I saw in his eyes the big question, where did this guy buy his professor and doctor? Five guys, and they are going to change that village. But today we are great friends. And as soon as our administration in that village has to decide something, they very often call the church leadership and say, would you pray for us? Because we have to decide on that issue and we would like to decide proper. The situation changed. And one of the ideas was the ecological day. Very simple thing. We decided we would clean up the streets of our village. And we invited the whole village to come along. Not a single of them came. We were cleaning up the streets. And they were all looking. You know, if you're in a German old village, we even have a term for that. You are a person who has just started to taste the flavor. They call it Reingeschmeckte. So you are not really belonging to that village. And so they were getting out of their houses and standing there and observing us working, doing nothing. We cleaned up the village. The next year we cleaned up the village. The next year, and the fourth year, the first people came. Today, our church is offering an ecological prize for the most ecological person in that village. The price is €1,111, and one of the businesses in the village offers it, but offers it through our church. Now, when we have our day, ecological day, we clean up the village, the whole village is there. The whole village is there. And after that, we have a huge celebration on our premises, of course, in our church. We celebrate together. The people's church, the so-called Volkshochschule, you know, people's university, we call it. So it's an institution where people go to and they learn all kinds of arts and dance and music. And it's an institution in our country. It's called People's University. But the People's University in our village, in our area, was closed down because the society had no money. So our church decided we will revitalize that People's University. And we became surely the first church with a school of ballet and music. And we were the first church in the whole area in Western Germany having the first dancing school. And you can't imagine what happened to me when I would come to other churches and they would ask me, is that true you have now a school of dance? I say, yes. Well, our denomination kicked us out because we didn't belong to them. But, you know, out of the people who came and learned dancing, I was one of the first students, you know. I have Baptist legs. They do not move proper. So I was one of the students, one of the first students. And when I came there, we started to learn dancing, social dancing. It is no sinful dancing, normal dancing. We learned dancing. Almost all students from the village coming to us have been baptized and became members of our church. Because first I came to the dancing school, and then people would ask us, oh, this is a funny church, you see. How is your worship service on Sunday? Dude, come and look. What's the problem? They would come to a church, to the church building for dancing, and they would end up in a baptisterium. That's a nice way to go. Well, I could tell you more about our church experience, becoming holistic and becoming a serving church, a church for the others. Always, not with the goal to become world-like, but to change the world according to the kingdom. That's a different story altogether. More question? Yeah, go ahead. We have about 3 minutes left.
Okay. You said we need a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. Especially in this territory focused, being a focused church on a territory. Many of our churches, the people come from all the villages around the church. Some of our churches are in question whether we should concentrate all the people on the village where the church is, or whether they should concentrate on the village where they live. And you said we need to ask the question of the calling of God. And I'm afraid we are not really used to do that. Can you do you have some suggestions for leadership how to start this process of asking? And maybe there's the fear of blowing the church somehow if you ask these questions and start to think that way.
Yeah. Well, it's in the next lesson. It's really not to be answered in 2 minutes. I give you an example of a church in Bavaria, yeah, or Catholic surroundings, an evangelical free church. They started about a year and a half ago with a process. When I first came to that church to describe to them the process, they told me that they would come to the church from an area of 50 kilometers in radius. 50 kilometers around. So they would drive in. It was a classic drive-in pious McDonald's. So classic. And people could not bring their children during the week because you will not drive 50 kilometers back and forth and then do it many times a week. You will do it just once, and you do it on Sunday. So all activities were on Sunday, and all activities were ingrown. The church had absolutely no time for their city. So what did we do? We helped the church, first of all, to concentrate on their personal calling. I call it creating a biographical map. It was the first step. Then we did. We created a map of social relationships. We asked the question, now, where are your social contacts? If you connect with people who are not Christians, then you do not connect with people who are not Christians just by a chance. God is somehow involved in this. So how does your social map look like? Then we had a map of spiritual contacts and spiritual relationships. Where does your spiritual life take place? Obviously not in the event called service. Very little of our spirituality is formed in worship services. Don't even think it's formed there. It's expressed there, but it's not formed there. But where is it formed? So we created a map of spiritual relationships. And then we created a fourth map, and that map was a map of supposed guidance of the Lord. So if you think about your church, what do you feel God wants your church, or where do you feel God wants your church to be? And with this church, we then blended all the four maps. It was fascinating to see where the center of it was. Now I tell you, the center wasn't the location the church has its building today. 5 kilometers away. Not that far, but just 5 kilometers away. In a city which was completely against the other city. Since the Middle Ages, the two cities were fighting each other. So the center of the actual activity of the church wasn't the place where they are gathering today. So the first thing the church had to do, to ask the Lord, is what you have created, what reality you have created, is that your guidance, your leading? And in hearing prayer, we found out, yes, God wants them to be in the other place. Then the next step was renaming the church. And the next step was getting into the context of the other place. And the result is, now we create, at the end, we created a multi-site strategical network of churches. One became many under one roof. But again, that's a different issue. See, I just named certain issues. The multi-site or network church operation is something very interesting to look in, especially in rural areas. And in Germany, we run a conference on building churches in villages. And in that conference, we talk about the very issue, yeah, in detail. How to create networks which at the end serve the locality. To answer your question directly, people always need to be witnesses where they live, not where they drive in to chill spiritually. That's not the place where you do your ministry, in your village. And the church leadership is well advised to see for ways how to create a structure serving it. But it's a different language question. I'm closing, and I just rushed through my presentation. Remember, you will remember some of it. I just named the issues. Even if they are German, you will probably understand it very fastly. I'm leaving this. We talked about incarnation. Incarnation is very simple. God concarne. God has become meat. God is there to be seen and to be touched and to be hugged. And God in the church is available. So in this incarnation process leads to the church to become humanic. Yeah? Here's the German word for it. Humanic. Humanic means the church needs to become a part of humanity, a part of the people around. And the people will recognize the difference only in human terms. They will not recognize the difference in terms of what have you, spiritual terminology. They will only recognize the difference if we are humanly different. So the church needs to become humanic. And the church needs to become bitextual. Bitextual means you as a church, you be between the two worlds. We are not of this world. Jesus clearly says this. We are in the world, but we are not of the world. So we are bitextual. We live by the gospel, but we live in the world. And we have to take seriously both realities. The bitextuality of the church is important. Like in this picture. You see, if you look at the picture coming down from heaven and sitting and observing it, where do they meet? In the head of a person. That's where the blend is taken. The head of our head, our paradigm, all the matrix sitting in our head is at the end driving the day. So we have to be changed by changing of our minds. Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. The church needs to be prismatic. So, in other words, the church will break the light of God into many colors. In other words, into the colors of our individual lives. So potential of the individual members is very important. And the prismatic church is very, very important. And then I have a new term for you. The church needs to become charismistic, not charismatic. We have with the charismatic asthmatic. There's lots of problems with the charismatic. But if we become a charismistic church, we take the mystics of Christianity, the mystics, the transcendency of God's revelation into our life seriously and become more spiritual on the one hand. But then in our spirituality, driven by Christ who has become flesh, we will see differences. Because God's Spirit has revealed Himself in a long history of 2,000 years of history. And then we have to look for a meta-national church reality. There's a little book called Multicultural Church. In our European reality, you have to kill the monocultural churches. If you want to see revival take place, you have to kill your monoculturality, because there is no such thing like a Dutch heaven. And there is no such thing like a German heaven, and there's obviously no such thing like a British heaven. You will be surprised. The heaven is much more black than some of us white people think. Yeah, and the dancing in heaven and the singing is obviously African. It will not be European. So we have to start to think in meta-national terms, going across the church and helping the church to become what the church is. And now I don't have time to explain all of this to you. And the last one, the church needs to be retroliminal. It's a great sociological term. Retroliminality means you stand between two worlds. You stand like this guy. This little gate symbolizes it. Or let's take this gate. It's a great Chinese gate. If you ever have been to China and you have been in a train station and you have smelled all these different nice and terrible smells of that train station, you know it smells inside. But then you do one step beyond and you're in a wonderful garden. We are in the middle of it. We are always here, but with one foot in heaven. We are here, but we are not yet in heaven. But we are retroliminal. The church, which is built for staying forever, will never be a church of power. Hans Küng, the great German-Swiss theologian, wrote to a saying which I will not read to you, time doesn't allow. So we are a church between continuity and discontinuity. We will always continue with the biblical approach, but we will always have to create new approaches. Always. So we never stay old. We never grow old. My grandmother, I drove her to craziness by asking her the simple question, "Mother, Grandma, now what gift of the Spirit do you have?" And she grew up in an anti-charismatic church. They didn't like that talking about gifts of the Spirit. And so my grandmother didn't like my question. So she said, "I'm 82. I said, "Well, Grandma, I know a disciple of Christ in German is called Jünger Jesu, but never Älter Jesu. So you are not the old follower of Christ. You are always the young follower of Christ. You can't follow Jesus and stay old and grow old. It's impossible. It's stupid. If you are with the Spirit of God, you will keep young. And if you do not keep young and do not understand that young people discover the world, so discontinuity becomes a characteristic of your church work, you will lose. So retroliminality is important. Let's see for ways to meet heaven. And God wants us to meet heaven right in our head. And change the paradigm of our church work. I wish you God's blessing for that. You are great people. You're already on the way. Far beyond my imagination. Because otherwise Heiko Schmidt would never move to the Nazarenes. Thank you very much for having invited me. Blessings.